The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today is like most people. He's got a full-time job. He's got a busy schedule. But on the side, he's been working on building out his rental portfolio. And over the last couple of years, he's bought 12 properties that he self-manages. I think this is absolutely incredible. I want to hear exactly how he got to where he is today. We'll get into it in just 30 seconds. We need to get a quick word in from our sponsor. We'll come right back and we'll meet Chris Cucciera from North Carolina.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the U.S. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Get your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com/guide. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com/guide.
Chris, why don't we start with you telling us about your portfolio today, and then we'll take a step back and we'll figure out how you got there.
Okay. Well, I currently have 12 properties. I just closed on my 12th last week. They're all single family, Class B properties, and they're all 3-bedroom, 2-bath. And most have a garage, but not all of them. And that's kind of the criteria that I usually aim for.
And what's amazing to me is that you're self-managing these properties while you're working full-time. Is it a lot of hassle or a lot of work to manage the properties?
For me, it's not. And it really has to do with kind of the criteria that I set out from the beginning, which was to have better B-class properties that were in really good neighborhoods that would attract a little higher rents and a little better grade of renter. And the other reason it's kind of low maintenance for me is I screen my tenants really hard. I really have learned over the years to become a fairly good property manager because, you know, you learn some lessons early when you start doing this and you get really good really fast.
So it sounds like you're really making sure up front that you're doing the work. So the properties are in good condition and the tenants are well screened.
They are. So whenever we buy a house, we try to buy at a deep discount, but we fully renovate the house and make them really beautiful and attractive for really good tenants. And on the screening side, you know, I have criteria laid out. It's plain. It's on my website. Basically, a 650 credit score or better is what we're looking for. I'll bend slightly on that. If somebody comes in at 642 or something,
sure.
You know, I'll look at their income and, you know, some of the other criteria. But income 3 times the rent and, you know, good stable job. And so far, it's been fantastic. You know, I just don't have any late payments at all. Very few issues, very few problems.
That's great. Now, tell me about the rehab. So when you buy a property, like what are you doing to kind of make it nice so that you're attracting a good tenant and also kind of tenant-proof at the same time?
Good question. I've learned and gotten better at it, I think, over the years. And I've kind of got a good system now and good things that we're doing. And what we typically do is ceramic tile in the kitchen and baths and a foyer, usually if there is one at the front door, high traffic areas. But we're using a very high grade laminate throughout the rest of the house. And I used to just do it down the living room and down the hallways. Now I'm just doing the whole thing, bedrooms and all. I just found that that's what people want. This is not like a 50 cent per square foot laminate. This is a $2 square foot laminate. It looks like hardwood. It's really beautiful. It's a dark dark color. We do, you know, the paint on the walls is like a taupe color and then a nice bright white trim. Houses look great. You know, as far as appliances, I've also upgraded that in the last three or four, Dan. I started going to stainless because I found I could get decent stainless appliances for not that much more than, right. you know, the black. Kind of done with white. I don't think I'll ever do white again. And it's just these little things that, you know, attract tenants. And,
yeah, I think tenants. That's smart because you're right. It's not a huge cost difference to go stainless from black, and you get more of a wow factor when a tenant walks in there.
They really do.
They're probably going to like the house more, and they're not going to want to leave because the house is so nice.
It's true. I mean, we even go as far as like the one we're doing now is an older house, older than I normally buy. It's a 1978. And most of the houses I've been buying are 20 years or less. But so we'll go as far as to change all the doors. They're all the old solid wood doors and been painted 100 times. So we're putting all 6 panel doors on with the nickel hinges and trim. We change out all the hinges, the doorknobs. Even if the doors were 6 panel, we'll change. We'll get rid of all the gold, you know, mm-hmm. any gold light fixtures. I usually put ceiling fans in, usually in the living room and the master bedroom. So just little things like that that, you know, try to make it as attractive as possible.
What about the major systems? Like, say a hot water heater. If there's maybe 2 years of life left on that, will you keep it or just swap it out?
To date, I probably should have been, and I know that's probably smarter in most cases, but to date, I have not done that. If it was working, we left it in place and figured we would expense that when the time came.
Okay.
But that said, this house that I closed on last week, it was pretty tired looking, like extremely tired looking. So we did replace that. It was the first time I've replaced a hot water heater out of 12 properties.
Okay. Okay. Now, the other thing that you're doing is you have your tenants sign 2-year leases, which I think is a great idea because a turnover can really kill you. And I think that's probably made a big difference in your profitability, hasn't it?
It has. It's all part of the low maintenance program, you know, and mm-hmm. Having people that want to stay, they're looking for a place to settle. So you'll weed out a lot of potential tenants that maybe are just looking for a place to crash for a year,
yep.
Before they move on to something else, you know? So yeah, you know, you get people that are a little more committed to staying. And you know, it's less hassle. So after 1 year, if my lease ran out and they did decide to leave, then that's, you know, that's more management. That's more having to share the house again, you know, make sure paint's touched up and do it all over again. So.
Do you put that in your advertising that you have a minimum 2-year lease, or do you wait for people to call in before you tell them that?
No, it's right there. Everything's okay. In black and white in the ad. And I actually kind of put it right in the forefront. I want to, like I said, I want to weed them out mm-hmm. early. I don't want them calling me if they're not interested in 2 years. You know what I mean? And we get plenty of calls. It doesn't stop people. You know, houses now are renting for, you know, anywhere from the day I put the ads up to the time it's rented is usually less than three weeks.
Okay, that's great. Now, you live 2 hours away from your properties. Has that been a challenge at all, being that you can't just run over after work if something has come up at one of the properties? Like, has the distance been an issue at all?
It hasn't, because I built a really good team of contractors that, again, was part of the strategy going in. I, you know, connected early, you know, went through a few, but as you weed out really good, reliable people, I'm very loyal to like I have a great plumber, a great electrician, excellent handyman, you know, and whenever I need something, it's just a text or a quick email or phone call. And, you know, I give him regular ongoing business. I pay him immediately when, you know, when they do something for me, the day I get the invoice, I pay them, and they all know that. And they treat me right because of it. You know, it kind of works both ways, and I get good response time out of them, and I get decent, consistent, honest, you know, contractors.
Coming up on the Rental Income Podcast.
Chris has been using some creative financing to finance his portfolio, so I want to get into exactly what he's doing. But first, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor today, MyLandlordHelper.com. If you're feeling a little bit overwhelmed managing your rentals, but you don't want to turn over the entire management to a property management company, MyLandlordHelper.com might be what you're looking for. They can help you with tenant communication. So if a tenant has a problem, whether it's 3 o'clock in the morning or when you're sitting down for dinner, they have people available that will take that phone call. They will be your point of contact for your tenants. If your tenants want to pay rent, they will take care of rent collection. They have a couple different portals tenants can use. They'll send out reminders a couple days before the rent is due. And if the payment is late, they'll make follow-up phone calls. They'll send out late payment reminders. They'll basically be there to do all the stuff that's kind of the dirty work with managing a rental property. They can send out legal notices if a tenant is seriously behind. And they'll help you with vacancies. They'll help you get your listings together. And when you get applications, they'll help you screen those tenants. It's a really good service, and it's very affordable. It's about $50 a door, so it's a lot cheaper probably than what you're paying your property manager right now. If you want to find out more, go to MyLandlordHelper.com. You can get more information, and you can also sign up for a free 30-day trial so you can test it out, see if it's for you. If you have questions or you want to find out more, they have a very friendly staff, and they'd be more than happy to get on the phone with you and answer any questions you might have. Just go to MyLandlordHelper.com for more information. That's MyLandlordHelper.com. All right, let's get back to the show. So, Chris, tell me about the financing. How are you financing your rental properties?
Okay, well, you know, after the first couple that I purchased with 20% down in a more traditional manner, you become more of a real investor when you have to get creative mm-hmm. and find other ways to kind of get things done. So for me, I learned about finding private lenders, and I actively started seeking them. And through the local real estate investors club, I connected with over a period of a couple of years, a couple different lenders. We actually have a Yahoo Groups page that is part of our local chapter. And so people post stuff on there all the time. And you might see a lender post, you know, they've got $100,000 to invest. Somebody's interested, you know. And so anyway, I located people like that, and I would reach out to them, talk to them on the phone, try to get them out for a cup of coffee to start to build a relationship with them. And I did this with a couple different individuals, and ended up, you know, doing a deal together. And beyond that first deal, you know, we built a lot of trust and have since done several with each of these private lenders.
Now, I've noticed that there's two different types of private lenders. You have the people that are investors themselves, and they have some extra money, and they want to just diversify or have some more passive income streams. And then there's also the person that just has money. They've got maybe a good job where they make good money, and they don't want to take the time to learn real estate. And so it's easier for them just to give you the money, someone that knows what he's doing. So what how are your lenders? Like what group do you would you say they fall into?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
They both are actually doing some investing themselves.
Okay.
But I would say the majority of it, their money is made by lending it out.
Okay.
And they dabble, you know, they dabble in real estate investing, but they're more lenders than they are anything else.
Okay. So tell me how it works. So like, are you recording their loan as part of closing, or is this just some, like a note that you've written up that you give them that isn't recorded?
No, it's, they basically become the mortgage company.
Okay.
It's all official. They're on a deed of trust. Yeah. Okay. They're on a deed of trust. And so, you know, I guess real world examples are probably the best. You know, this last house I just purchased, I bought at a deep discount on online auction, actually. And I've done that before. So I was able to get a house that would have an after repaired value of about $130,000. I bought it for about $60,000. I borrowed $72,000 from my lender, my private lender. So I borrowed above what I had to pay for the house. So when we closed with the real estate attorney, my lender's name, husband and wife, they end up, as the lender on the deed of trust. And I walked out of the closing with almost $13,000 that I put in the bank to use towards the rehab of that house. And that's just a typical example.
That's great. So you've walked out of
there. That lender is totally... That lender is totally willing to, if you think about it from their perspective, why wouldn't they lend me that money? If they do any homework on their own, they can quickly find out online a rough, value of this home. And they can see that there's a ton of equity in it. Mm-hmm. So if I were to ever default, which of course I wouldn't, but if I did, they are not only going to get their money back, but they're going to get their money back plus some.
Right. Right.
Because the house is going to be worth more.
And
so it's a very secure loan for an individual.
And the lenders that the lenders you've worked with, that they haven't give you any pushback about you walking away at closing with money before any work's been done. A lot of times lenders have like a draw. So like after the work's done, then they'll give you the money. But your lenders haven't asked for that.
They haven't asked for that.
That's awesome.
I think probably, Dan, to be fair about it, probably the first time I did a deal with either one of them, that probably didn't happen. It was probably just for the amount of the property.
Okay.
But as we built a relationship, these people kind of become, friends almost, and there's a lot of trust. And I pay them on time every month. Now it's been for years. I've refinanced several of them, so they get their money back. So there's a lot of trust now with me. They know that I know what I'm doing, so they don't really even question me anymore.
So your plan is that you buy the properties with their money. You're using their money to buy the property and to fix it up. And then once you get a tenant in there, then you refi it with the bank to pay off your lender?
That's been the goal. So okay. My goal has always been, for me personally, has been 30-year fixed low interest loans so that I could maximize cash flow. That's what I'm all about. My goal, everybody's goals are different, but for me, I'm trying to get the most cash flow I can out of each property so that eventually I'll have a nice retirement, on top of any measly Social Security or something,
Right.
So that's kind of been my goal. And a 30-year fix just gives you that security. The rates are never going to be any lower than they are. They're only going to go one way,
that's
up. So I'm trying to lock down as many as I can, as soon as I can. And that's my plan.
Now, what kind of interest rate are your lenders charging?
It does vary some. And I will tell you that I've beat them up over time and beaten them down. When it started out, honestly, I think the very first one I did, I think I paid 12%, which is right up there with hard money numbers. Mm-hmm. And I think we had a 2-year term on the loan, max 2 years where I'd pay them back. And, it worked. It worked fine. It was a win-win. They made money. I made money. I paid them back in a year and a half or so when I refied. I think I then talked them down to about 10% on the next deal. Long story short, both lenders now are down to – one is down to 9%. The other is down to 7%. And
we've gone
to interest-only loans on the last several. That's been working out really good for me.
That's really, really good. And that I think that's a good thing to point out is that as you get a track record, if someone is just getting started with private money, as you get a track record – and your investors see that you're paying them back, you're paying on time, everything's working out, you can go back and you can negotiate those lower interest rates. And, I think that works out great for everybody because there's less risk to them because they've seen that you've done these deals over and over again and that there's more profit for you if you can get a lower rate. And so you go to a bank and you refi it. Have you had any trouble getting the long-term financing as you've been getting more and more properties? Has it been more challenging?
It has. I'll tell you and the listeners that if they're heading this direction or they have a similar plan, houses 1 through 4, if you have good credit, are relatively easy to get 30-year fixed financing. It's when you get above four, when you get from houses 5 through 10, it's a whole new set of criteria. You need more in the way of cash reserves in the bank per property. So it gets harder and harder as you go because you need more and more cash reserves because you have more and more properties. Mm-hmm. And for anybody that's not clear about what that means, is basically for each house that I own, I have to have principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, so your PITI. If on a house, let's say it's $650 per month for all in, you have to have 6 months of that. So $650 times six per property. So the more properties that you accumulate, the more and more they want to see sitting in the bank as cash reserves. That's problem number one as you get above four. Then your credit score requirement jumps on house number five from 680 or better to 720 or better. So you got to make sure you're keeping your credit tight and keeping your revolving credit low and all those little tricks that you got to do to keep your score high. And then thirdly, you've got to have 25% equity in any given property that you're trying to refinance. So if you've got a house that's valued at $100,000, you can't owe more than about 75 on it, or you're going to have trouble refinancing, or you have to bring cash to closing.
Yeah, so that's a good point.
That's kind of what I've learned, the hard way.
Yeah, it definitely takes time, and you've definitely got to build up those reserves. So, well, Chris, this is a great story. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story with us. If somebody wants to learn more about you, where's the best place online for someone to look you up?
Well, I do have a website. It's kind of a long name, Dan, so you may want to just link to it, but they can email me at TFA, it's Tom Frank Apple, TFA office number one at gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, I will go ahead and put your website and your email on my website. You can look it up later on at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode148. If you like this podcast, we have new episodes every single Tuesday. Make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever app you're listening to. That'll make sure that you automatically get the new shows as they're released. And also leave me a review. It really does help if you leave us a review on whatever app you're listening to the show on. Thank you so much for listening and for your support. And I will talk to you next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.